Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Walk Your Talk with Leanne here on Life Coach Radio Network. I am so honored that you have chosen to spend your afternoon with us here, at least a little piece of it, on Life Coach Radio Network. I am one of over 20 coaches here on Life Coach Radio Network who come to you each and every day to inspire, encourage, and challenge you. And you are listening to us here on Life Coach Radio Network. We also have two other networks here on Blog Talk Radio. We have Life Coach International Network and the Life Coach Chat Channel. And you can find us and more information about our radio network and all of our hosts and co-hosts at lifecoachradionetworks.com. So again, this is Leanne Parsons, the Walk Your Talk Coach with Legacy Now Lived. And I am a certified professional coach with a specialization in working with adoptees and their families. And this is November. It is Adoption Awareness Month. And I am super excited to be able to come before you two times this month at least and talk about adoption, the different challenges, the beauties, and the mystery surrounding what I like to call the tapestry of adoption. I've created a very unique heirloom coaching process to really serve this community so together we can weave your stories together and create a legacy of love for generations to come in your families. And so you can find me at thewalkyourtalkcoach.com in case you want to peek in while we are live on the radio today. And you can also find me on Facebook and Twitter and Pinterest and as well as LinkedIn. So I just love to empower the adoption community to help them connect and embrace their stories and really improve their relationships. I am an adult adoptee myself. Excuse me, I'm also a mom, a new grandmother, and I am a wife of but one husband and just a real servant leader here at Life Coach Radio Network and just super honored, again, that you're here. If it is your first time joining us here on Walk Your Talk with Leanne, I warmly welcome you. It is indeed an honor and privilege to have you here with us today. And if you are a returning listener here on Walk Your Talk with Leanne, I am so full of gratitude for you being here today. I do come to you live from Los Alamos, New Mexico, and I am enjoying looking at snow on the Sangre de Cristo Mountains right now. We have a clear, beautiful blue sky day, full of sunshine and snow-tipped mountains. So I'm super excited. They're letting us know at our local ski area here, Pajarito Mountain, that we are going to ski on Thanksgiving, which I am anxiously awaiting that. We'll see if that happens. I pray that that is true. And so that is enough commercial announcements here on Walk Your Talk with Leanne. If you are a guest and you would like to call in today and ask any questions or share your thoughts, I want to provide up a phone number for you. The number is 646-716-9397, and I can bring you into the studio, and you can share your thoughts, questions, or comments with me and my beautiful, beautiful guest today. Ladies and gentlemen, you are in for a real treat. I am joined today by Susan Tebos. Susan is a mom to her three kiddos, Matthew, Nikolai, and Lyra. They are all adopted from Russia. Susan believes that story can be healing in the life of an adoptee. She challenges adoptive and foster parents to speak hope and truth into their children's hearts. Susan wrote Before You Are Mine, and that is available on Amazon, to help parents with this journey. And so welcome, Susan, to Walk Your Talk with Leanne here on Life Coach Radio Network.
Thank you, Leanne, for having me today. And, you know, I'm a bit jealous because you have, sounds like a pretty nice day going on there. And in Michigan, in Grand Rapids, Michigan, we have kind of a gray, dreary day. So a little jealous up here.
All right. Well, let's see if we can bring a little bit of sunshine to your day during Yay. Our radio program today. I have been in Michigan. I grew up in Minnesota, Susan, and I remember those cold, dreary fall days quite well. One of the reasons why I live in the West now.
Well, and we just had daylight savings time where we lost an hour and it gets dark at 5:30 and it's just winter's coming. We're used to it. We're hardy here in Michigan.
Yes, you are. What is, you know, just really curious, what's your average snowfall?
We broke records last year in all the history where they kept records from like 1800 and something to now. We had the highest snowfall in history, and I can't remember what it was, like 100 and, I'm going to probably quote this wrong, 130, 40 inches or something like that. It was, let's just say it was a long winter. Deep snow. It was beautiful. It's always beautiful.
Absolutely. And did you have some beautiful color this year as well on all those wonderful hardwood trees you guys have up there in Michigan?
Yeah, we're very fortunate to live in a state that experiences just some really dramatic seasons. And so we can go from summer being in the, you know, averages in the 70s and 80s, just beautiful. And then when the trees change, the colors are magnificent. That it brings in a lot of visitors to Michigan to go up into the northern parts of Michigan, especially where we have so many lakes and we're surrounded by lakes like Michigan and so on. And the trees are just a rainbow of color. It's fabulous.
That is the one thing, Susan, that I really kind of miss about Minnesota is the beautiful falls. You know, here in New Mexico, we actually still have deciduous trees that I'm looking at outside of my studio here that still have leaves on them. And they're still green, believe it or not. And then we have a lot of trees that have dropped already, but we don't near get the array of color that you get up in the Midwest, the northern Northwest, or the northern Midwest state. There we go.
Right.
And yes, I love it. Well, we are here not only to talk about where we live and what we love about it, but we're here to talk about adoption today. And I'm super excited that you are joining me here today, Susan. You know, I first became acquainted with you. Golly, I was looking back over some of my archives, and it was just about a year ago at this time when I first peeked in and contacted you, and you know, we exchanged a couple of emails, and I was acquainted with the book that you have written along with a fellow friend of both of ours before you were mine, and just was very struck by your heart for your children, the adoption community, as well as raising awareness and really helping our children and our culture as a whole really start to wrap their minds and hearts around the topic of adoption and the ripple effects that our history, our heritage really has on us, kind of on an everyday basis. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we're going to dive right in. Is that okay with you?
Sure, let's do it.
Let's do it. We are here to be of total service and, you know, to our community. And this is being that this is Adoption Awareness Month. My goodness, I have a little tongue-tied today. November is Adoption Awareness Month all over the U.S., and there's lots of buzz and chatter. There is a lot of stress and a lot of celebration that comes around this time of the year in the month of November. And, you know, we're not here to say one is right and one is wrong or anything like that. We are here to raise awareness, shine some light on some corners that perhaps people haven't thought about. And so thank you very much, Susan, for kind of walking down that hallway with me. You know, as I was looking at over your book before we came on live today, I loved how you shared in the book that Before You Were Mine is another way in which adoptive parents can help their child feel an extra measure of love and care. It's a great resource for all adoptive families. And that was a quote from a very dear, beautiful woman, Mary Beth and Stephen Curtis Chapman, who we know are, you know, front runners within the adoption community here in the U.S. and really love to see awareness and waiting children get placed. And, you know, with that introduction, I would love to hear and have you share with our listeners a little bit about your story and your connection within the tapestry of adoption.
Well, it's, you know, we've been doing this now for 16 years. It all started when we adopted our three children from Russia. And, you know, it's interestingly, and I can still see the cobblestone streets in the old town in Moscow. And I remember being with our second son we had adopted. His name is Nikolai, and he was almost two. He was 3 weeks shy of being two, and he was in a stroller, and we were with our translator, and we were strolling around Moscow, but we had just come in from 9 or 10 days in Siberia. And we stay, you know, international couples, when they adopt, they usually spend time in the town where the child is from, and our kids were all from the same area, but we always had to go to court, and we always had to stay in out there, and out there meaning it's not necessarily like what we experience every day, you know. We don't, it's where they don't even, they rarely speak English and so on, and so you start getting a little hankering for some home type comforts. And so I can remember being in Old Town and strolling, and I remember seeing a McDonald's, and I thought, I'm not a junk food person, but somehow that just sounded good. So we treated our little guy to a McDonald's hamburger, and it was just like a slice of heaven. You know, we loved the culture. We loved adopting internationally. We loved the people in Russia and all the people that we interacted with. And our kids are teens now, though. Our kids are, well, I have a preteen daughter, our youngest, she's 12, and our son, Nikolai, his nickname is Kola. He was 2 when we adopted him, and now he is 15. I just took him to the Secretary of State's office to get his driver's permit today. Also, 6'1" and, 230 pounds.
Oh, my goodness.
So he's huge. And so it's amazing how that time flew from him being that little guy in the stroller to this big kid man, this boy man, and just amazing. And then our oldest son is Matthew, and he is 16. So I have 2 kids learning how to drive. So that's kind of where we are today.
Wow, you brave mom.
What was that?
Oh, I say 2 young men learning how to drive at the same time. My hat's off to you. My kiddos are grown and married and have left the nest, so to speak, but it hasn't been that long ago, Susan, that I remember that driving experience. And how beautiful is that? You know, I hear the love in your voice as you speak of your 3 children. I can, you know, I unfortunately we're not face-to-face right now, but I can feel the love coming over the airwaves from you as you speak about your kiddos. And, you know, I did a little bit of research on Russian adoption, and I thought it was really interesting. 62% of all Russian orphans are adopted by foreigners. Obviously, we probably knew it was something close to that, but I thought that was a pretty dramatic number, that very few, you know, less than 38%, stay in their home country.
I think domestically in Russia and Ukraine and other countries, but I can only speak from my experience being in Russia, that the awareness for caring for orphans is just now taking off over there. And so in the past, not only was there not the awareness, but there also was such a, you know, the devastating economy, which led to many of our kids, you know, our kids, 2 out of the 3, were relinquished from their first parents because they of poverty, of just unable to feed one more mouth. So I think, you know, things are changing over there. But, yeah, you're right. It's it's interesting that that's not as big as it could be, and I think that's going to change.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know what else I thought was interesting is back in 1999, there was 4,000, I kind of like numbers, 4,381 adoptions out of Russia in 1999. In 2013, there was 250, according
right,
to the statistics
well,
that I found. And so, like you said, they are getting more aware, right, of
well,
the need to take care in-country. And so what other things do you attribute to those numbers?
Well, the news over the last couple years has been because Russia has closed their doors to American adoptions, so Americans can no longer adopt children from Russia, which is very heartbreaking. And there were many, many families who were in the midst of adopting who had gone to visit their what they considered their kids, to go over there and see them, and made commitments, lifelong commitments to these children, and then that was all stopped when some, you know, political foreign policy things took place between our two countries. And not to get political, but the parties involved pulled the plug on American adoptions. So that's what's gone on with those numbers. When we were adopting, we could, our first son, this is in 1998, we were able to go over, we probably were there within 4 months of receiving a referral for him. He was 7.5 months old. We were able to do a round trip and be back home within about 10 days. When they were adopting from Russia in the last few years before the country closed, people were waiting longer and longer, and that seems to be the trend now, too, is that people adopting internationally have to wait longer because there's so many T's to cross, or is that right? T's to cross, I's to dot. So much paperwork, so much more legalese, so many more minor issues that keep kids in orphanages way longer than they should be. So my heart aches in that regard, because the sooner we can get these kids into loving arms, the better for them and the better for everybody involved, the better for our communities, the better for these children to be whole and to be a healthy part of family in our communities.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. I love that. And, you know, I knew about when Russia closed their doors, and a lot of families were devastated, right, because they weren't able to go. And you know, it really shows that dramatic decrease. When I was looking at the numbers, I'm like, wow, that's a huge shift.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there are still many, many orphanages. That doesn't mean that the orphanages are closing in Russia, right, Susan?
No, not at all. As a matter of fact, our baby home where we went to adopt our kids, everybody's got a full house over there. There's plenty of children who need homes, and I pray for that particular baby home practically every week as I think of them, because I know that those kids need to be in families, and I just pray for those caregivers to just love on them. They were wonderful caregivers, but that was unique. Some places are so overcrowded that the caregivers don't have time for the kids and time to hold them and comfort them and, you know, make them feel safe. And so, yeah, those are some of the things that that are happening over there. There's plenty of children. There's just some other political issues that need to be resolved. And so we can just keep lifting it up to God to ask him to open those doors that have been closed.
Mm-hmm. Fantastic. Thank you for sharing that. And, you know, so your journey, you said, golly, you know, 16 years ago, You set mm-hmm. off on this journey. And so, you know, on Walk Your Talk with Leanne, I love to peruse the internet, look around, and like I shared earlier, your story got my attention, and really privileged that you're here today. But share with us a little bit about what life was like for you 16 years ago prior to your first trip to Russia. What was kind of going on in your world, and how were you led into adoption? Loaded question.
Yeah, no, I, you know, I was one of those moms who, well, actually, I wasn't a mom then. I was one of those women who was raised in the kind of the women's lib, on the tail end of the women's lib thrust, and kind of embraced that and went to college, did the graduate work, got a fantastic job in marketing, and traveled all over. And so I was just remarking to a friend of mine today that I don't think I've put on nylons in years. You know, back when we were working in corporate life, you know, every day we would put on the hosiery and the pumps and the fancy dresses and, you know, the business dresses. And I worked in marketing for a cosmetic company, and we ran 100 million miles an hour. Just bringing products to market and being executives, I guess. I don't even know how to box that in right now. I was busy, and it seemed like that was my life. And then when I married my husband, Mike, we started thinking maybe we should consider having a family. It wasn't huge on my agenda because business women always have agendas. You know, we have agendas, you know, as long as our arm, you know, a to-do list. and being a mother kind of always frightened me. I really didn't know how to be a mom. You know, I thought I knew how to do all this other stuff, but being a mom was really abstract to me. And so we went through kind of the general route that most people do to have children, and that nothing happened particularly in the first year, and that was fine. And then one day we decided to do a little fertility investigation and dabbled in that just briefly, until one day we saw an article in our local newspaper about international adoption. And I thought, somehow this is really touching my heart. Well, along the same time, I was also really growing in my faith. We had been attending a really wonderful church. The Holy Spirit was very active in transforming our hearts. And so this article hit me in a different way. It was no longer about the checklist, becoming a mom. It was more about, oh, wow, this is what God calls us to do, and we could do this. I said that to my husband. I said, we could do this. And, you know, because in Scripture, God calls us to take care of, you know, widows and orphans in their distress. Mm-hmm. And so I think there's a real timing issue here that God had prepared my heart, our hearts, considering my husband, and prepared us for something like this, and we were ready to say yes. So that was where we sat before we saw that article, and it said it was about a couple who had adopted in our town internationally to Siberia. And so that's what we did. We got on the phone and called the agency and said, we want to do it. And here we are 16 years later.
Wow, 16 years later, three sweet kiddos, and here you are on Walk Your Talk with Leanne to help spread awareness right along with me and the journeys that we're all on. We never know what's right around the next bend, do we, Susan? And
no,
here you are, right? Yeah, so 16 years ago, you kind of really jumped into this journey. And share, you know what, we are almost, I'm going to give our phone number again real quick, the question. If any of our listeners would like to call in and ask a question of Susan, or myself, Leanne, please feel free to call in at 646-716-9397. Thanks, Susan, for allowing me to do that. You know, there are a lot, like we were saying earlier, there's a lot of chatter inside the church, outside the church, around adoption this month. And, you know, it's so fun to have another adoptive mom on my program today. You are the very first adoptive mom that has adopted exclusively internationally that's been on my show. So I'm super privileged. And, you know, help me, help all of us, Susan, understand what it's like to welcome three beautiful children into your home from another culture, different language, the travel, the emotion of it all. Help us understand from your perspective what that's like to jump into that arena.
When I think back 16 years ago, I am amazed how confident we were going into the process of adoption. I don't think it was the paperwork that was so daunting as it is. I don't think it was the travel that threw us at all. I think it was really holding that first child, our son, in our arms. And I remember he was so tiny. He was underweight, and he hadn't had a whole lot of holding, and he just craved to be mothered, I guess, you know, to be loved, to be cared for. You know, a lot of times when we go into adoption, we think we have all the answers. And I guess in a way, in hindsight, maybe it was good I didn't know what I was doing, or I don't want to say it like that, but it's kind of good when you don't always have all these preconceived ideas, because when you receive a child from another culture or speaking a different language, when you receive that child in your arms, you have to come to terms with the fact that you might not be able to parent this child the way you were parented. Things have happened in this child's life, a relinquishment, a loss took place. Our son was separated from his first love, his first mother. And in my book, I just want to just point out, too, in my book, Before You Were Mine, one of my favorite chapters is chapter 8 on honoring birth mothers, because when you have a child who has a history with another culture and with another family, you have to be able to carry that with you for them for the rest of your lives together. You want to honor who that was and who that person is in their life still today. And so I guess that whole process of international adoption, culture, language, it's all wrapped together, and we have to embrace that, not set it aside on the shelf and forget about it. So I hope that gives you some insight into how I was feeling. I feel like it might have been okay that I wasn't super mom going into this thinking I had all the answers, because to be honest, to be real authentic and real, I didn't have all the answers.
Mm-hmm. And boy, I just love your authenticity in that, because it's very true, and none of us do, whether, you know, we physically birth a child or welcome a child into our home through adoption, we don't have all the answers. And mm-hmm. So I stand here in agreement with you, Susan, that, you know, parenthood is a journey, right? And you know what, I really appreciated that you shared, you talked about really honoring the birth mom. And so share with us some practical things that you do to honor the birth mom, honoring her heart, her loss, and her mm-hmm. story.
Mm-hmm. Well, what we do in our family, and we started quite young with the kids is we started out by creating life books. And one of the things I do teach in Before You Were Mine in my book is a little bit about life books. And I think really as I look at that, I'm not here to promote that busy moms with busy lives and busy kids go out and create a life book. But for us, it was helpful for a number of reasons. I needed to really hunker down and figure out who birth mom. We have three birth moms. I really had to figure out who each of them were. You know, I really had to get into their heads and their hearts, put myself into her shoes so that I could understand what happened, understand her human frailty, the fact that something was happening to her either in her control or outside of her control, and to really understand her loss, because for me, it's very hard for me to believe ever that a mother can separate from a child without grieving and without loss. And so from a practical standpoint, to get back to your question, practically speaking, a life book is great for the kids. You know, they love to see pictures, and most of us don't have pictures of birth moms and birth dads when we are internationally adopting. But we can still, in my book, we have ways of doing that so that we can bring that alive more. But what we also do practically over the years is that we've had conversations with our kids. They know the names of their birth moms. We are very fortunate to know each of their names, to know their eye colors, to know what they did, whether they were married or not, to see their signatures, their handwriting on the documents that released their kids for adoption. We know their stories. Many, many parents who adopt internationally will tell me when I'm out and about traveling and talking, will say, we have nothing, we have nothing. But we always have something, because when we take the time to talk about it, we can find out things that we never imagined before. So I've worked with my kids over the years, and as I look back, you know, I see that it's made a huge difference to have these conversations with them at different developmental stages that they're going through. So like when they were little, we didn't get into a lot of the details from the heart's perspective, the loss perspective. We got more into the facts and data of it, if you will, you know, like where were they from? And we celebrated heritage camp and went to heritage camp and learned what they ate in their country and what they dressed like, and we found a local store here in Grand Rapids, Michigan. There's actually a store that is run by a family who is from Eastern Europe, and they sell chocolates from Russia and candies. And so we enjoyed celebrating their heritage and helping them learn and be proud of their background, their culture, because that's forever a part of who they are. Practically speaking, too, as they moved through the developmental phases, you know, as you know, each time they move through a developmental phase, there's a cognitive upgrade, which means basically they understand more, and their brains can process more. So as we moved through the stages of them growing up, like I can remember specifically when my daughter Lyra was 10, and I would sit in bed with her, and it was a cozy time, it was a comforting time, it was a safe time, and I would sit in bed and we would talk about her birth mom, and there were times where she would say to me, hey, she's my first mom. You're her helper mom. And I'm like, okay, isn't that? That was, to me, in my heart, that was very interesting to see her mind working with the information I was sharing. Then as she moved through, you know, and of course I'm accepting this because, you know, it's her reality. And so then as she moved through her understanding, there were times that she was angry. She was angry at her birth mom. As she got to be a little bit older, she figured, you know what, we talked about possible substance abuse, possible alcoholism. We don't have all those answers, but that made her angry. My daughter was visibly experiencing, you know, visibly showing anger from her heart. And now as we move into her preteens, I asked her today before we, you know, we connected here, and I asked her today and I said, hey, what do you think? Does it help you to talk about birth mom and what happened? And right now in this stage, she's like, you know, I haven't really thought about it lately. And so you see, we keep entering into the conversations, and sometimes we get protectiveness, sometimes we get anger, sometimes we get, I'm okay. You know, so the conversations are such a practical thing. But again, I'm not always sure parents are equipped for those conversations, and that's why Carissa and I, my co-author Carissa Woodwike and I, we wrote this book to help parents just really get ready for those types of conversations and not to just go into this lightly and say, you know, I know what I need to do. I've got this figured out. It's not as easy as we would think.
You know, I love that, Susan, and it sounds like you have really set up your heart and your mind and provided space for your kiddos to come with those questions. Because like I often tell people, being an adoptee myself, and I was domestic adoption, it was closed back in the 60s, mm-hmm. But one thing that we can just, you know, echo from the mountaintops is adoption is a lifetime event. Mm-hmm. And it didn't end the day you signed the papers. And those questions, they're real, and they do. Different cognitive stages of development, things are going to come up. And, you know, as I've spoken with several people within what I like to call the tapestry of adoption, there are some real key common threads mm-hmm. that we all experience, whether it's domestic or international, foster care, adoption, all of that. There are some pretty strong common threads that a lot of us adoptees go through. And the overarching theme that I hear oftentimes is, I wish that I would have been able to talk about it more when I was growing up. You know, mm-hmm. I came from the era of secrecy. And, mm-hmm. you know, how beautiful it is for me as an adult adoptee to hear you share about the safe place that you're providing for your kiddos to be able to have those conversations. That is sacred space. And mm-hmm. I appreciate, you know, and thank you for sharing that and giving that encouragement to other adoptive families out there that this is incredibly important. Because if we are not allowed to talk about it while we're growing up, it makes it harder to see how those ripple effects impact mm-hmm. our future relationships.
Right.
As we step into adulthood. And, well, you know, you're providing a real gift to your kiddos by doing that. And just really, I like to call it a real conscious adoption approach. You know, you're not mm-hmm. afraid to wake up and hook up to the resources as well as your own heart and dealing with your own issues, right,
mm-hmm.
and your own
Correct.
Thoughts surrounding that. And so that's just such a great gift. And how did you prepare?
Well, you know, I just somehow felt very passionate about making sure my kids were able to heal from that relinquishment. I just knew somehow in my heart that their hearts would not be the same if we hadn't dealt with some of these things that happened to them. For example, I can give you, I was talking to my 16-year-old son today. He was jumping out of the car to head to school, at our little Christian school, little 11th grade. And I asked him, I said, you know, does it help that we've had these talks, you know, about your birth mom and about relinquishment and what happened? Does it help you to know? And, of course, being a 16-year-old boy, he's like, well, Mom, do I really have to answer that now? And I'm like, well, I'm going to, you know what, be on this radio program today, and it would really be helpful and authentic for other people to hear this. And he said, okay. So he sat there and he kind of, you know, mulled it over for a second. He said, and this is, I wrote this down because I thought it was very insightful. And this from a kiddo who didn't want to have any conversations about birth mom. This from a kid who used to cover his head with his blanket if I brought the topic up. This from a kid who's had to gradually be weaned into having these conversations, if you will. Here's his quote. He says, our conversations, what they do, it unlocks more stuff I didn't know. And I thought that was interesting. Sounds like such a tiny little thing, but he says it unlocks. And I thought, unlocks, that's a key word. So when I got home, I thought, I'm going to look up unlocks and what does that mean? And it said, when I looked it up online, it just really stirred my heart because it meant to free or to release. And I thought, oh, he's healing. The door has opened. It's unlocked. And this child who has held his little cards to his heart so tightly, you know, he's held on for whatever reason in his heart, whether it's fear, like I'm afraid to know because it affects me so greatly. It affects who I am, or fear because maybe I did something wrong or I wasn't good enough. Can you imagine a child walking around into adulthood not feeling good enough? How that's going to impact the whole life of that child. And so for me to hear that my oldest son feels that his heart has been unlocked and things are releasing, to me that has been worth every awkward conversation, every attempt on my part, every time I had to draw him in, it's been worth every minute of it.
Oh my goodness, Susan, I am weepy over here. I've got goosebumps. And you know what I just love about our time together today is the authenticity that you're bringing to the table. I am so incredibly humbled and honored by that. The real-time stories that in the moment, you know, and you're being fully present with your kiddos in real time, you know, even today talking about these issues are, it's just so encouraging for me to hear, you know, as an adoptee for one, but also as a coach, as a fellow mother and a woman. And, you know, there's a quote that I love about unlocking it. You know, he who holds the key can unlock our hearts. And it just sounds like, you know, you have provided safe space. And you have, through prayer and petition and a level of commitment that is an incredibly high calling, you have held that key for your kiddos. And, wow, that's just such a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful story. I'm just, you know, it's pretty hard to render Leanne speechless. And, you know, that story was just so beautiful. And thank you to your son and your daughters for sharing those precious stories with you today. Because I think when, you know, when you think of, especially young men, it's harder for them to tap into that at that age. But he was willing to let you into that space and share with you that it unlocks. And, you know, that is such an incredible glimpse into the heart and mind of an adoptee. And I often say, you know, prayer is the key to unlocking many, many things. And, you know, it's kind of interesting, Susan, because I'm actually working on a project right here in our community. We have a lot of adoptive families here, international. We're pretty much a melting pot up here in Los Alamos. And so we have a lot of international adoptees here as well as domestic. And when I've shared with them about some of the different challenges and the heartbreaks, right, and the victories and the beauty surrounding adoption, a lot of them are having a harder time wrapping their mind and heart around that, that there really is challenges and that there really is something to unlock.
Yeah.
And this project that I'm going to do is, you know, I want to bring a lot of education into the school system as well as into doctors and nurses' offices to help them understand more fully the different unique challenges that we can face as adoptive families. And, you know, that loss from relinquishment, it is real. It impacts, like you were saying, it impacts the child's heart. It impacts the mom and dad's hearts, the siblings, the grandparents. The impact is huge, and it impacts our culture as a whole, because when we think about, you know, over 12 million people walking around who have an adoption story, that's pretty significant. And it's important, you know, that we do raise that awareness and, you know, step into the shoes of the birth mom, the mom and the adoptee, the birth dad, the adoptive dad, the grandparents, the aunts and uncles, right? And share that compassion and really encourage people to not be afraid. You know, even when you shared about your son hiding behind the blanket, you know, that's kind of what we're doing here on Walk Your Talk with Leanne, and the conversations that I have here live on the air as well as one-on-ones, you know, throughout our community here in Los Alamos as well as our culture as I go speak and share. It's pretty amazing how important it is to continue to draw back that blanket and provide that comfortable, safe space to help our kiddos navigate their stories. I love one of the quotes that you sent to me just about your, one of your desires is encouraging parents to help their children navigate their stories, accept it, and eventually forgive and hopefully embrace that whole thing and find their voices and getting a clear picture of who they are as an individual, as a family member, right? And so, so what is, you know, one, I would love it if you would share what maybe a couple of the top impacts that you have seen on your kiddos as they process their relinquishment stories.
You know, when I look at that whole processing phase, I think we're seeing a lot of that processing, that more sophisticated cognitive ability taking place during puberty. And that's kind of a, you know, double whammy there in a sense, because when the kids are in their teen years, they're examining their own identity, who they are, who they hope to be. And so when their identity is in question or questioned because they don't have the answers to, you know, what happened, or they haven't gone through grieving that loss, it does impact them, like you said earlier. You mentioned what are some of the positives of all these conversations, all this this investment of time into their hearts. And I would say that there's a sense of peace, especially in my older son, that I didn't see when he was younger. He has had a lot of anxiety as a teenager, but also as a young child. Some of that stemmed from the way he was cared for in his first 7 months, but also just that loss when he separated from First Mom, he separated from the smell of her. He separated from the touch of her. He knew her voice. And so when all of that disappeared, trust disappeared too. His trust in the world was somewhat shattered as he, you know, he waited for 7.5 months to see, you know, what does this world have to offer me? And for him, it was fear. And so he kind of, in his own little unconscious sort of way, had grabbed onto fear, and it was hard for him to let it go. So he himself struggles with ADD, you know, just afraid of getting out there and doing things. And so I see him releasing some of this fear as he sees that he is good enough, that the things that happened in the past were not because of him, that any fantasy that he may have created in his head or in his heart isn't true. Those lies will not deceive him into who God made him to be. And so that work in him is coming to fruition. It's been a long go where I look at my other two kids. So, you know, you compare and contrast when you have three. You get to do that and see the impact on them. And I see my daughter has been going through different phases, as I mentioned earlier in the program. And I'm excited for her that she has a sense of acceptance, and we'll see how she continues to grow through her understanding of her relinquishment as she moves into her you know, her identity years, her developing her identity in the next few years. She's only 12 right now. But then I look at my son Nikolai, our middle guy, the six footer who's 230 pounds. He was always such an easy guy. He was the easiest laid-back toddler, comedy, had a costume for everything, the best personality, the sweetest heart. And then he, you know, you get to a point, and it's usually, again, that teenage years, he really started losing a grasp on who he was. He was angry. He would, you know, even though we were already talking to him about what happened, he was really grappling with things in his head, but also just the whole idea of growing. You know, we can't leave out the fact that body growing, brain growing, all those things combined, it kind of created this perfect storm, if you will. It was like, okay, puberty on steroids plus, you know, some, you know, heart issues related to relinquishment. And we kind of had a little bit of a perfect storm there. But what we did in order to help him to his place where he is now is we received his heart. When he grieved or when he was sad, when he couldn't cry or when he could, we were able to handle those emotions. Does that make sense? It's like sometimes what happens with parents is that if they take the risk and start tapping into these emotions, they don't really know how to handle them. And so if a child does go through an angry phase, for instance, or a grieving phase, or whatever that phase may be, sometimes parents don't know what to do with that, and so they pull away, especially if a kid is acting out. They'll pull away from that emotional display because they don't know how to deal with it. And as, like I said, way back in the beginning of your program, we try to parent our kids the way we were parented. And if you were like me, you were probably raised with parents who didn't really, you know, engage the heart too much. It just wasn't the thing. You know, it was a generational thing. Their mom, their grandma didn't, you know, share the love. And it's kind of more evolving now into people being able to step into, you know, the guff of emotions, the tough sides of emotions, and really stay in that storm and be that real strong anchor of hope to help them get through. So, you know, these stories, nothing's going to happen overnight. As you can see with our 16-year story, things have unfolded and we've revisited stories. We've gone through phases. We've seen emotional challenges. And yet I think the strongest message I could give is to parents listening is to stay the course. Don't be rattled by it. Get on your knees if you have to and pray and ask for help, but to stay the course, because trust and love was interrupted the first time when they were relinquished. We cannot afford to let that be a question in our kids' minds, that they are not loved, that they are not secure, and that they are not safe and in a trusted relationship. So,
wow. Yeah, I'm going to ask. I'm looking forward to re-listening to that last quote that you just shared. Everything that you have graced us with, Susan, on our radio program today has been so incredibly informative, so heart-centered, and of tremendous value to the adoption community. And I'm just so humbled that you have chosen as well to join me today. And, you know, when you said just now about that trust mm-hmm. and love was interrupted, and that, mm-hmm. you know, we have a real privilege to and responsibility to hold that trust and mm-hmm. that love for our kiddos. Whether they're our bio kids or our adopted kids, that's an important message, is to really hold that space. And especially for those of us who have been impacted by adoption, you know, I think those are, as you and I both know, those are huge issues for what I like to call the tapestry of adoption, the trust, the love, the fear, the anxiety, right, depression, all of those different challenges are pretty prevalent within the adoption community. Mm-hmm. And so it is risky business. Mm-hmm. It is risky mm-hmm. business to stay fully engaged as a parent and not to pull away. Mm-hmm. It's risky to lean in and listen to our kids or even the community when they're saying things that we don't understand. And it's incredibly important for us not to take that personally, because it's really not about us.
Mm-hmm.
It's about them, and it's about, mm-hmm. like you shared and I have shared over time, it's developing and embracing their identity mm-hmm. and really figuring out who they are. You know, some of the questions that I used to ask myself, because I like to remind people, Susan, when they ask me, why, Leanne, are you so passionate about this, and why are you talking about this now? Mm-hmm. And, you know, why are you creating coaching programs for this community? And why do you have a project that you're doing? You know, some people don't understand. Why don't you just be happy and settle in and just kind of live, right? And it's like, well, no, wait a minute. There's something that needs to be shared. And if I can be, you know, a little bit of a voice along with each one of you who are so eloquent in speaking, you know, I like to remind people, I am that baby in the crib or in the stroller 50 years later.
Mm-hmm.
And so to remember that we grow up and we do have developmental stages. And every day, Susan, I learn and I grow and I grapple with some of the same issues that I grappled with when I was 5, 15, mm-hmm. right, 25. That these, you know, it's a layering that we get to experience. And, you know, I just love you sharing your heart on that and just really having that approach with your kiddos and that conversation. And I'm very much looking forward to re-listening to this program and continuing to learn from you. And I'm looking, we are at the top of the hour, Susan. I cannot believe that we are here. I know. And I'm so, you know, I could just spend hours, you know, sitting with you and sharing more and learning more about what you have learned and what you have given and the impact that you're having
inside and outside of your family. And I want to have you on again. So please tell me you'll come back.
Absolutely. I would love
Excellent.
To.
I love that. Yeah, I'm going to hold you to it. And so, Susan,
right.
If you could share with our listeners just maybe a closing thought that you would have. And, you know, I'm sure that I have many listeners out there who are loving your voice and your message and your passion and your risky, love-filled, heart-centered parenting that you have given your three amazing kiddos. Share with us how we can get a hold of you and a closing thought that you would have for us.
Absolutely. I'm on Facebook at www.facebook.com/, I believe it's called, SusanTBoss.author. It's a long one. Sorry about that. But it's if you just Google Susan T. Boss, last name spelled TEBOS, you'll find some of my writings, and you'll come to my Facebook and also a blog that I write to. As far as closing, yeah, it's hard to end this conversation because I don't think the conversation can ever end. When we love our kids so much and we want so much for them, we have to, like you said, take the risks and hold strong and love them through their grieving time, through their identity development, just have ears that are listening, get out there and buy them a latte and have some latte talks and ride the wave, the tidal wave of emotions with grace. So that not only do they see that you love them and care for them, they see your heart, but they get to see their own heart. And I think that really, really will help them heal.
Love that. Thank you, Susan. And again, you've provided such tremendous value for all of us here on Life Coach Radio Network, especially for me. And I just dedicate, all the words spoken here, and I'm in such gratitude, to our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ, who has definitely penetrated my heart in my own healing process. I also want to dedicate our conversation to all of the families and the individuals whose lives have been impacted by adoption. This is November 2014. It is Adoption Awareness Month throughout the country, throughout the world, and people are paying attention. And adoption's risky. Life is risky. Relationships are risky. And, we can collaborate, communicate, and educate in such a way that people can peel back, right, the blanket into this adoptee's heart, into the birth mom's heart, and into the adoptive family's heart. Because our hearts are big and they're rich and they're real. And they are often transparent if each one of you has the courage to lean in and listen to them. So thank you, Susan. Again, this is Leanne Parsons, the Walk Your Talk Coach at Legacy Now Lived. You can find me at thewalkyourtalkcoach.com. as well as all the social media networks. I encourage and welcome you to reach out to me. If there are stories that you know, listeners that I need to know, people that you are in close contact with that have a story to share that would love to speak with me, please connect with me and reach out to me and let me know about them. I am very anxious to learn. I look at myself, Susan, as everybody's student. I have so much to learn on this journey called life and consider it a privilege to share a conversation in sacred space with women such as you. And so, again, thank you, Susan Tebow.
Thank you, Leanne.
I'm so sorry that I mispronounced your last name at the beginning of our program, so I stand corrected. And please forgive me for my lack of remembering to ask you that at the beginning of our program together.
Not a problem at all. And thank you. I just too am feel honored to be in this space with you and to just share our hearts and our experiences with those who are listening. And so thank you so much. Hugs to you from Grand Rapids, Michigan, and I really, really have enjoyed being with you today.
Oh, thank you. Hugs right back at you.
Thanks.
Susan from Los Alamos, New Mexico. And until next time, my friends, be well and have the courage to walk your talk boldly, Susan, into your legacy now lived. Thank you, listeners, for joining us today, and we will see you again here on Life Coach Radio Network 2 weeks from today. Take care and God bless.